from all of that hard work that we're talking about, let's go to a different phenomenon. Because first of all, during the pandemic, we had the great resignation, but now there is a new buzzword, as there always is, trending on TikTok and elsewhere. And it's called the quiet quitting. And it's about frustrated employees who are deliberately setting out to do the bare minimum. Milona Curran, Associate Professor of Organisational Psychology at DCU Business School. You're very, very welcome.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Is this something new? It's a new phrase, quiet quitting, but is it entirely new?
Yeah, it's a new phrase. And I guess if it's all over TikTok, it must be a thing.
It
doesn't exist in the academic literature just yet, but I'm sure it'll drop any one of these days. It's always been, I guess, a challenge to ensure that the right person's in the right job. And when the right person's in the right job, they rise to it and they perform very well. It's called person job fit in the literature. And so what employers really need to do is pay a lot of attention to who they bring in the door, and so that they fit the skills and the characteristics and the requirements of the job.
What is, first of all, just to remind me, what is quiet quitting? Is this just going in, doing your job, and that's it? Is it the bare minimum and walking out?
Yeah, what they're saying is that they are ensuring that they do enough so that they don't get sacked, but no more than that. And so what that means is that they're not demonstrating what we call, let's say, organisational citizenship behaviour, which is referred to as the glue that holds the organisation together. And it's basically colleagues helping each other. It's when one person finishes their job and they realise their colleague's a bit stressed or a bit overloaded, and they go over and they help them out. And that forms part of what we refer to as the psychological contract, whereby there's an expectation, it's an unwritten expectation, that employees will perform, will be loyal, will be dedicated. And then employees have that same expectation of their employer, that they will treat them well, that they won't expose them to danger, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is those contracts or those expectations can clash, such that there is mixed messages going on and people don't understand exactly what the real requirements are of a job. And that can lead to a huge amount of frustration, such that people feel, well, I'm not getting what I want or what I thought I was going
to
get from this job.
So
it's a work
I'll
to just rule. Kind of kick back.
It's a work to rule. I'll just do the bare minimum. Well, it probably might horrify a lot of employers out there, but does purpose really matter? Like, I mean, not everyone is in, you know, where their work is their main purpose. They're not, you know, living to work, you know, so they might take a view that actually, yes, this role pays my bills. I do my job sufficiently. I don't go the extra mile, but sure, what's the harm in that?
Yeah, for sure. And is that such a bad thing? Is that such a crime, you could say? But what you really want are engaged workers. You want people who are energised or enthusiastic, who are dedicated to the job at hand, who take it seriously and find it meaningful and find a purpose in it. And when people do meaningful work, that's what gives them actually a really strong sense of satisfaction from the job. And so in order to, I guess, design a job such that people feel that it's motivating, there's a few things that you should bear in mind. One is that there's variety in the job, that people aren't doing the same thing day in, day out. And a second is task identity, meaning that you're doing a decent activity at work as opposed to just the last link in the chain to the work process. The third is task significance, meaning that you are doing something that actually makes a difference. And even if that's the most mundane task, like, you know, wiping the floor or whatever in a hospital, that the porter realises that, you know, the effort that they're making to keep the environment hygienic is going to minimise infection, et cetera, et cetera.
So what we're really talking about here, I think, is culture of an organisation. And of course, that's not just the job of the employees. With the pandemic brought about several things. It made all of us question our work-life balance, particularly where I don't know what when we're overworking, the opposite of quiet quitting, actually, when we're going over and above what is expected. What's the interconnection between the great resignation, which was people leaving their jobs and saying enough, and quiet quitting? Is it more of a subversive movement?
I guess maybe some people that are caught up in the great resignation may have had the luxury of taking a step back and thinking, off I'm going and I'm moving to Kerry and I'm going to get out of the rat race and all the rest. Or maybe they just decided that life's very short and I can't any longer sacrifice so much of my life, my well-being, my peace of mind, my existence with other people to something that's not delivering a sense of impact and meaningfulness and satisfaction to me. But the quiet quitting seems to be more people sitting at the desk still and not actually taking that big step, maybe not being brave enough to do it. So I don't think they're probably the same populations.
I can't quietly quit on air. But when you talk about quietly quitting, they're going in, they're doing the main kind of sense of it. Is it a generational thing, do you think, particularly in an era where they have this war on talent? Our employers, it's not an employer's market if they're out seeking to get it. So is it something that employers are finding they have to tolerate it, or how do they even identify it?
Well, here's the thing. There is a lot of research talking about or looking at millennials. And so these are people born from, I guess, the mid 80s. A bit of a, it's not so clear exactly when the millennials were born, but that kind of time. And there is research that suggests that they look at work and consider values of work a little bit differently to before. So, you know, in time gone by, there was a sense that you were lucky to have a job and you better work hard and take it seriously and all the rest. Whereas nowadays, millennials are more inclined to consider work-life balance, more inclined to consider what's this place like. Like, a lot of millennials will check out an organization's culture before they'll even apply for a job, never mind accept a position. And they'll do that by talking to people, and it's very easy to actually access information about a culture from all sorts of different standpoints. And so they will be concerned about how does this organisation operate and also what does the organisation do. Like, they certainly like working for big brand organisations, but they want to ensure that this organisation takes the issues that they consider to be serious seriously.
So it's not just
also
money for them. And it's
not just money. Yeah. No, they do tend to have a sense of entitlement and a sense of, like, and I'm drawing on the work of Jennifer Twenge, who's brilliant in this field, a sense that if they put in the effort, they should get the outcome. It's a little bit like everybody getting a ribbon on sports day, as opposed to a hierarchy of merit, let's say. And so they can be actually quite impatient with respect to how long they're going to wait for promotion. So in her work, Twenge's work, she said that 2/3 of them expect a promotion within 15 months and expect their salary to increase 63% in 5 years, whereas the average salary increases 5 to 15% in that length of time. So
We were talking about how a lot of this relates to culture, and the culture is set by the leaders.
For sure.
Which is really, really important. And, you know, a lot of time when people are going for jobs, they're going through psychometric testing, they're going through all sorts. Like, I mean, multiple rounds. And I'm always curious as to how, in many cases, we deliver so many unsuitable leaders.
Well, because in many cases they don't use psychometric tests and the evidence is really strong as to the predictive validity of psychometric tests. So that would include an IQ test, which has the strongest relationship with performance, and then a personality test. And the personality test that will be looked at is what's called the Big Five, and they're the core five personality characteristics. And the most important one of those for performance is conscientiousness. And those two elements, personality and IQ, should be assessed by employers. But the problem is that a lot of employers don't give enough attention to what the job requires, and so fail to make the match and fail to slot the person with their skills and characteristics into the job that's going to suit them best.
So are particularly maybe some of the bigger companies, these are they not all going after the same people? Is it not just generating the same pool?
Well, what you have to bear in mind also then is what are the person's interests? You know, so you can have a very strong IQ, very solid level of conscientiousness, but if you're plain not interested in the task at hand, nothing's really going to turn you on. And so that's where the leadership piece really comes in. And leadership development is an enormously important.
It's huge.
I actually run a leadership development program for women in DCU, and it's all about trying to access sophisticated and build sophisticated leadership skills. And what that means as much is the leader learning about themselves and what they value, how they perform, what their gaps are. such that they can connect with their employees better. Leadership is all about influence. And so you need to be a real smooth operator as a leader to really connect with your staff
and to
bring
see
what
people,
they need.
To bring people along
well,
with
for
you.
Sure. Yeah.
And obviously when we talk about leadership, it's not just the leader or the sole mm-hmm. leader or the executive management team, mm-hmm. but anytime I read about surveys about why people quit their jobs, mm. it's usually their immediate line manager.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. People, that's the line. People don't leave a bad job, they leave a bad manager. Mm. So leadership has to cascade down throughout the whole organisation such that people at every level recognise their responsibility for transmitting the organisation culture. But not just in their words, they have to kind of walk the talk. And they have to, you know, people, employees are not stupid and they will very quickly identify if somebody's, you know, just talking the talk without any kind of authenticity behind it. And so leaders have got to enact the values of the organisation on a daily basis. They're being watched. They're being scrutinised as to whether or not they're really honest about what they say. And that's a hugely inspirational message when there is that connect, I guess, between words and deeds.
Somebody says this term quietly quitting is nothing new. I manage people for almost 30 years. Mm. The first time I came across this behaviour, it was 28 years ago. They called it the disengaged or the actively disengaged. The scholar says we just call them lazy wasters. I suppose
a bit harsh.
A bit harsh there. I suppose it'll probably take some time for us to assess the impacts of the pandemic and all of these things, quiet quitting, the resignation and, you know, very very much an employee's market at the moment. But of course, all of that could change. To what extent do you think working from home has changed that? Like, I mean, a lot of people say they were more productive at home. Others needed the office and kind of the presence of other colleagues and everything. But because I know many people have just, they really have genuinely reassessed the culture in certain workplaces that demands so much of you as the standard. So when we talk about quietly quitting, you might actually just be doing your job and doing it well.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess just in relation to performance expectations and key performance indicators or KPIs, you know, employers have to make sure that they are they reflect absolutely and honestly what they're looking for, as opposed to it just being, you know, an aspirational kind of a thing. But with respect to working from home, Linda Grattan, who's a professor in London Business School, is brilliant on this. And actually, she says we need to wait a while because the research needs to catch up. We don't really have the data just yet. There's obviously lots of data on flexible working and has been for years. But with respect to the new phenomenon working from home, we need more data. But she does talk about the working from home being here to stay and how can we manage that effectively such that everybody gains. And that would mean things like people who are working at home or working from home, that the time of their day shouldn't really matter with respect to when they do their job, but the delivering of the output is what matters. So some people are larks, like I'm a real lark. I get up early in the morning, can't stay up to save my life. But other people then work far better at nighttime. And so that shouldn't be dictated, let's say, if people are working from home.
Yeah. So I suppose one of the key things then is it's actually about motivation, both motivating yourself as an employee, but also employers, because sometimes you're motivated in a very difficult jobs market. You might be motivated by fear, but it could be paying the bills, anything like that. So how do we maintain motivation? Because presumably it's a two-way street.
Well, for sure. But absolutely, some people are motivated by extrinsic factors like salary. And also you need a certain income to allow you to live your life the way you want to live. And they're all choices you make, I guess, you know. But people are motivated when they have a sense of achievement and a sense of accomplishment. And that's what's referred to as intrinsic motivation. And the problem is that once you put a price or once you label that we need you to behave in a certain way, people it can dilute the value that a person actually gets from doing it because now there's a price on it. So extrinsic and intrinsic motivation are two sides of the coin that need to be referred to.
I think I'm with the millennials there. What was it? 60% wage increase they wanted within five years.
Yeah,
we're going
to
have to quietly quit this conversation. Okay. Milrona Curran, Associate Professor of Organisational Psychology at DCU Business School. You certainly have given us plenty of food for thought. Thank you for coming in to us today.
My pleasure.